haven't listened to everything that I said in the past 12 or 13 lessons, and I might have, there we go, and I might have, made a mistake somewhere, but if I did, as far as these weeks of years are concerned, the 69 weeks, we're going to go over 69 weeks of years in the, and then the 70 weeks of years. And there's a difference. There's actually two prophecies in Daniel 9. And I think that I just want to, if nothing else, I want to specify that and make this plain tonight. And so I'm going to go back to Daniel 9 and read half of it and clarify that there's actually two prophecies. And it does make a lot of sense. And then it will clarify some things that might be confusing there about these weeks of years. And so I hope that you enjoy this. The book of Daniel. Well, if nothing else, the book of Daniel talks about three major themes or more. But at least three major themes are this. If you're wondering what the book of Daniel is about, the coming Christ and his resurrection. Rejection, I'm sorry. Pardon me, that's a big mistake. The coming Christ and his rejection, that is, by Israel. The rise of the Antichrist in the latter days, and that's coming up. And our world is boiling up to that. That's a matter of fact. And then also the restoration of the nation of Israel. And, they're gonna be restored, and they will be, as the Lord wanted them to be all along. They're going to be a blessing to the whole world during the millennial kingdom. Now, in lessons gone by, we were discussing with some folks how long is a Jewish year? And, you know, people have pointed out that the Jews, they read a year according to the lunar cycle, which is 360 days. We know that the solar cycle, or the cycle of the sun, is a few more days, 365 days. And so, you know, there was discussion about, well, how accurate can we be about the birth of the Lord, the crucifixion of the Lord, the Acts period, and these weeks of years, you know, how accurate can we be? Well, that, you know, that's a valid question. But if you search into, let's just say you wanted to find out, about Israel and how they reckoned a year, you're gonna find, an ample amount of information that, well, that whole situation about, you know, to reckon the exact date of the birth of Christ, to reckon the exact date of his crucifixion, and then prove it with days of the year according to lunar and or solar calendars is, I'm just going to tell you this, that I've looked into it. If you're wondering, what is he jabbering about? This is very important if you're studying about these weeks of years. And come to find out that Israel possibly used both. I found information that Israel, what they did is they realized that, in my studies at least, I can say this, that they realized that a year according to the sun was different than a year according to the moon. And so what they did after a few number of years is they added a month. Okay, so not every year in the Jewish year had 12 months, some had 13, if you didn't know. And so eventually, too, if you look into this, eventually they might have reckoned their whole calendar according to both the lunar year, 360 days, and the solar year, 365 days. And I think I don't have the name of that added month. I can, you know, I can get that for you eventually. But also, too, their months were different than ours. Their months began in let's say their first month of the year began in the middle of March and it ended in the middle of April. And the year that I believe, or the month that I believe Christ was born in was the month that began in the middle of September and ended in the middle of October. And in that month, particular month there, you had the Feast of Tabernacles and a couple other really important feasts there that speak of the living Christ. And so the reason why I'm jabbering on about this is if you're going to get involved in trying to prove that the Lord was born in 4 BC, according to how the Jews reckon time, you're going to get into a study that I have decided is beyond it's beyond what I'm doing here. It's beyond it. It's a study that would take you into a volume. It would take you into a volume of material. And so I'm not blowing it off, but what I'm saying is that I realize that that aspect of what I'd be trying to do in the study of Daniel would lead to a study that could last a half a year or a year in itself. And so, needless to say this, in regard to the reckoning of time and such, did Christ come in the fullness of times? Well, yes, he did. He surely will come again. And just as surely as the Lord is going to come again, the man of sin is going to come again. This is reckoned according to the book of Daniel, yes. And so what I'm saying is this, is that there are many great men of God, great women of God, that apparently did not take up the involved study in the reckoning of the Jewish year according to the lunar cycle, the solar cycle, or the combined cycle. You know, and so this study of time, you know, as I mentioned before, we say that the Acts period ended at AD 70, with the destruction, I personally think that it ended before that with the setting aside of Israel, but some people say, well, the destruction of Jerusalem totally into rubble happened in AD 70, and, you know, the setting aside of Israel happened in AD 62 to AD 64. Now, I could sit back and, you know, and then some people say, well, Romans was written in AD 58, and the Lord was crucified in AD 29, but wait a minute, maybe he was crucified in AD 33, and I could sit back and I could say to all those things, oh yeah, well, prove it to me. And if I said that to any one of you here tonight, prove that the Acts period ended in AD 62, prove that, or AD 64. How do you reckon that? Do you reckon that according to the Gregorian calendar, the Jewish calendar, solar time, lunar time? I mean, you'd be scrambling, okay? Either that, or maybe I'm being somewhat of an uppity person here, but you'd be scrambling. So as I'm saying, what I'm saying is that if you're going to get involved in being extremely precise in trying to understand exactness, exact years, and proving it or making me prove it, you're talking about something that could go on for literal years. And so what I'm saying, and I realize that in what I've been studying. And so there are many great people of God that have decided on particular years. And for some reason, and they're the Welches, and they're the Bingers, and, you know, they're the Oscar Bakers. And I don't know if anybody ever said to them, oh, the Lord died in AD 29, prove it. You know, the Acts period ended in AD 64, prove it. Prove it according to lunar time, solar time, or the combination of the two. If anybody knows that anybody that has confronted these great men of God or other people of God as such, let me know. Tell me if anybody ever did. And I never saw it. I never personally have seen anybody confront these men. And so with such a statement. And so I will say this to you, that they, in their studies, were satisfied with particular years. And so you could say, well, okay, well, they were satisfied, but their satisfaction wasn't good enough. Okay, you could say that. But then, you know, then you would have to, whoever you might be, man or woman, you'd have to go out and you'd have to start really digging, and you'd be studying for a long time. And so rather than get involved in that, I'm going to settle on certain years myself. And it's, you know, and I hope that I wasn't too brazen in saying that. But in fact, from what I know, that what I said is true. What I actually said is true. And so, as far as I'm concerned, the Lord was born in 4 BC. As far as I'm concerned, the Lord died in AD 29. As far as I'm concerned, the Acts period was 35 years. And as far as I'm concerned, the weeks of years do figure into it. And so, anybody that wants to write to me or talk to me is fine. That's concerned. But as far as the rebuilding of Israel, prove it. Thank you. Thanks. And here again, okay, let me just step back and say, you know, my tone might be a little goofy, but it's not, my tone isn't meant to be goofy. It's just that, in looking into these things, I realize what I'm dealing with. And then as I'm looking into Daniel, I realize that certain dates were accepted by great people of God. And so, I guess that, you know, and looking them over, they make sense to me. And so, that's the years I'm going to use. And so, in saying that, we're going to look back at Daniel 9. Okay, so I hope that came across in love, because heck, I will say this at any time, if the Lord gives you awesome, if the Lord gives you awesome truth, and in this dispensation, so that you have you know everything, I will quit my job and I will come down and live around where you live and just listen to you. And that's a fact. And I would do that in a heartbeat, and then I would know everything. And so I'm saying that in the sense that, hey, I'd love it to be that way, but it just isn't. And so let's see if we can make some sense as far as the 69 weeks of years and the 70 weeks of years, because they're not the same in Daniel. If nothing else, hopefully you'll say, oh man, well, that was great. You know, that was great that at least I know that. We're going to get into Ezra 6, hopefully, a bit of Nehemiah, and such. Okay, so here we go. Daniel 9. Turn to Daniel 9, 18 through 27. And it says, oh my God, incline thine ear. And we went over the image of Daniel. We had in Daniel 2, we had some discussion about that. And there's various, a couple of different ideas about the times of the Gentiles, and we stated that. That's very important. And we were talking about the dominion of the power on earth given over to the nations other than Israel. That in fact, is going to still happen until the Lord comes back the second time, I believe. And so we discussed that. Daniel 9:18, O my God, incline thine ear and hear, open thine eyes, and behold our desolations in the city, which is called by thy name. For we do not present our supplications before thee for our righteousness, but for thy great mercy. So, O Lord, hear, O Lord. Forgive, O Lord, hearken and do. Defer not for thine own sake. O my God, for thy city and thy people are called by thy name. And that while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God. Yes, while I was speaking in prayer, the man or the angel Gabriel, interesting, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation, or offering. And he informed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment gave forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore understand the matter and consider the vision. And so, this vision of Daniel in the book of Daniel is really important, and the prophecy of Daniel concerning Israel and concerning even the Acts period, concerning a lot of the works and calling of God, minus the mystery, minus the dispensation of the mystery, are spoken of or alluded to in the book of Daniel, and so it's very important. Goes on in verse 24, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgressions and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in an everlasting righteousness and to seal up the vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. And some believe this means the holy of holies, which is concerning the tabernacle. And you know that there are really heartfelt messages in these verses here, because the Lord loves Israel. There's no doubt about it. He's always loved Israel, and he's going to make them the nation that he always wanted. And so, and he's going to bring unto them everlasting righteousness. And so, the nation of Israel is dear to the Lord's heart, and so this prophecy is about his chosen people on earth and him bringing them into everlasting righteousness. And that's truly, really, really loving and important. He goes on to say, know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem unto Messiah the Prince, which is Christ, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Okay, so that's 69 weeks. All right, 7 weeks and 62 weeks, and that's 69 weeks. And the street shall be built again in the wall, even in troublous times. Now, it's a possibility that in lessons gone by that I projected this forward to the tribulation period, which would be incorrect. And what this is, what this actually is that this is the decree that was given by Darius the king. We're going to be reading about that, and then the rebuilding of Jerusalem in the time of Israel's captivity in Babylon until the dedication of the temple at the end of that captivity. That's what it's speaking about. And these first 7 weeks deal with the rebuilding of the city according to Darius the king. And it occurs, as a lot of people think, according to years, 454 to 405 BC. Okay? And If you look back at appendage 50 on the right side, we won't do that, and we won't do that, but you'll find that from 454 to 405 B.C. Is 49 years. And if you divide 49 years by 7, you're going to get 7. And so you're going to have 7 weeks of years where the streets of Jerusalem and the walls thereof will be rebuilt, and the troublous times were when they were in captivity, and eventually a king of Persia decided to relinquish their captivity and be joyous and righteous to Israel and deliver them from captivity. And that's what this is about. So Darius the king, and I don't know if I'll go ahead and say this, but there's many names of kings when we study, and we're going to see in Ezra 6. So I'll just leave that to what's coming. And so and then from that point, from 405 B.C., after 1 week of years was finished, you have 62 weeks of years. Okay, so 62 weeks of years is a time from the dedication of the temple in 405 B.C. until the coming Christ, when he was crucified, which will bring you to A.D. 29. And that's the 62 weeks of years, because it says, and after 62 weeks, after 62 weeks, the Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And what "not for himself," we saw that before, means he shall have nothing. And so the coming king, the Messiah of Israel, after 62 weeks from 405 B.C. was crucified, and he shall have nothing, which basically is an allusion to he doesn't have his kingdom because his kingdom rejected him. And so these 69 weeks bring us to A.D. 29, because the first 7 weeks was actually the rebuilding of Jerusalem during the captivity from 454 B.C. to 405 B.C. And so that's one prophecy. Then it goes on to say, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. I don't claim to have what that exactly means, but I'm going to dig in. And he goes on to say, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week of years. And in the midst of that week, or after 3.5 years, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And this is talking about the Antichrist and the last week of the 70 years. And so, and then it goes on to say, and for the overspreading of the abominations, he shall make it desolate even unto the consummation, and the determined shall be poured upon the desolate. And so, going back, we find in verse 24 that this prophecy opens up with 70 weeks of years. And so then, when did those 70 weeks of years begin? All right. So, and furthermore, I stated, and I believe, that the 69 weeks that are seen in verse 25 are not the same as the 70 weeks, if that makes sense to you. Okay? So the 69 weeks are different than the 70 weeks. The 69 weeks began in 454 B.C. with the rebuilding of Jerusalem and with the dedication of the temple in 405 B.C. That's when the first 7 weeks of years, or 49 years, ended. What about the 70 weeks then? Well, that's actually a different prophecy within the same chapter. So when did the 70 weeks of yours begin? Is the question. All right, so I hope that made sense to you. But I think if you look into this, it'll make sense to you. If the going forth of the commandment to rebuild the city of Jerusalem was 454 B.C., and the pronouncement of the dedication of the temple was 405 B.C., this equals to 49 years or 7/7, with the cutting off of the Messiah being 62 weeks later, which is 434 years later from 405 B.C. However, this prophecy is not the 70 weeks of Daniel 9:24, since everlasting righteousness has not come to Israel. The 70 weeks could not begin until Jerusalem was rebuilt. And so, Jerusalem was rebuilt and the dedication of the temple all concluded in 405 B.C. The 7/7 or 49 years is the time of the rebuilding of the walls of the streets of Jerusalem by Zerubbabel under the order of Nehemiah, and ended with the dedication of the temple in Ezra 6. Israel's final redemption, the rise of the Antichrist, will happen in the last week of the 70 weeks. Okay, so what does this mean? This means this, that in reckoning the 70 weeks, you have to start at the dedication of the temple, 405 B.C. 62 weeks from 405 B.C. leaves you, brings you to the crucifixion of Christ in A.D. 29, leaving 8 weeks left. If the Acts period, if the Acts period and the working of the Holy Spirit was 35 years, that's 5 weeks onto 62 weeks, which is 67 weeks until Israel was set aside, which leaves 3 weeks of years left. If the tribulation is 1 week of years, that means there's 2 weeks of years before the tribulation occurs. A tribulation, or that is the time where the Antichrist rise, and that can be proven. The 70th week of year, weeks of years is a definite no-brainer, because half of it is talked about in verse 22nd here, because the Antichrist is going to, he's going to confirm a covenant with Israel that they're going to go for. And this could be, the Antichrist could be a Muslim for all we know. And if you study what's happening over there in Israel and the Temple Mount and everything, you'll find that Israel doesn't have a voice at all, more or less, in their own Temple Mount. The mosque of the Muslims is right on, smack dab on the Temple Mount of Israel. And they're even the Muslims are trying to destroy any inkling that Israel even had a temple on the Temple Mount. You can look into this if you don't believe me. Look into what's happening over in Israel right now. Then you could look into, where is the new temple of Israel going to be built? Is it going to be built on the Temple Mount, off the Temple Mount? Where is this new temple going to be built? Because there's going to be another temple built there when the Lord returns. So where is this temple going to be? And if you study it, you'll find that there's enough room. You can study this. I might give a lesson about this. You'll find that there's enough room on the Temple Mount for the temple to be built right next to the mosque of the Muslims. Right next to it, 30 yards away. Matter of fact, it can face to the east, and it's where the Lord's going to walk up into the city, right through the east gate. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting information going on here. And what, why am I mentioning this? I'm mentioning this because there's going to be a covenant made with Israel, with the Antichrist. They're not going to know who he is or what he's up to, but there's going to be peace there. And it's a very good possibility that going along with this covenant that the Antichrist makes with Israel is he's going to start allowing them to build that temple right next to the mosque of the Muslims, is what I'm saying. Now, all you have to do, if you wonder what in the world is he talking about, look at the Temple of Israel. Google it. The Temple of Israel, the Temple Mount, what's happening over there, pictures of the Temple Mount, all of those things. Just Google it up and start studying. Because, in fact, many people believe, many great Christians believe that the Temple of Israel is in fact going to be built on that mount. And they're going to need, right now, Israel is a castaway there as far as having any voice whatsoever in doing anything on that mount. As a matter of fact, it's a possibility that there's armed guards over there keeping everybody out that's not a Muslim or that wants to share in the Muslim religion, or at least take a look at their mosque. If you know differently, tell me, but that's what I found out, that they're even trying to destroy any matter of anything that has to do with Israel on that Temple Mount. That's going on today. And so, during this last 70 weeks, there's going to be peace and safety. And the evil one eventually is going to have rule over what's bought and what's eaten, all right? And so it would be easy for him to make a covenant with Israel. But after 3.5 years, he's going to break it. And then he's going to create abominations of desolations in that temple, just like possibly a couple of others have done in the past. And then, you know, there's going to be a martyrdom of Israel. There's going to be overcomers. And then the Lord is going to say, that's enough. And he's going to step in. And I believe he's going to enter the city through the east gate, right through that temple. To this point, that's what I believe. He's going to step in. And then he's going to bind up this evil one for 1,000 years and set up his kingdom there. And righteousness will come to Israel. And so, these are a lot of things, you know, that, you know, are they ultimately important to us of the mystery? No. But, you know, they have to do with the prophecy of Daniel. And they, you know, they're somewhat mysterious if you want to talk about it. And so at this point, personally, and I'm open for any discussion whatsoever, believe me. Any discussion on this whatsoever. Personally, I believe there's 3 weeks of years left. 1 week of year is going to be the coming Antichrist, where he's going to make a pact, a covenant with Israel, and then after 3.5 years, he's going to claim to be God himself, producing abominations. He's going to voice abominable things to the Almighty God right in front of the world, and then the tribulation period is going to happen during this period of time, and then the Lord's going to step in and set up his righteous kingdom. So my question, and I still don't have an answer to it, if there's 3 weeks of years left, what about years 68 and 69? I have no idea. And so it could be a preparing for this last week of year somehow with Israel. We know that our manifestation and you know, are there any scriptures that say the manifestation of the church, which is Christ's body, will occur within 21 years of the binding up of Satan? No. But I believe that all of us believe that our manifestation will come before the Lord takes up this prophecy again, the prophecy of Daniel and the 70 weeks of years. I think all of us, you know, do we have a scripture that says that? Actually, no. But we have our knowledge and our wisdom in how God works and what he's doing that would lead us to that conclusion. Would you all agree with that? Well, at least I voiced that anyway. And let's turn to Ezra 6. And so, you know, the rebuilding of Jerusalem is found in the scriptures. I wanted to clarify something. Ezra 6, 1 through 5, and verses 13 through 22. Again, these are weighty things. Sometimes things that need a lot of study to understand. But, you know, if nothing else, maybe I piqued your interest. Maybe maybe there's a little bit of understanding in what I've said. And so I do want to make a point about three of the names. Ezra 6, it says, "And then Darius the king made a decree, and search was made in the house of the rolls where the treasures were laid up in Babylon. And there was found at Akmetha, in the palace that is in the province of the Medes, a roll, and therein was a record thus written. In the first year of Cyrus the king, the same Cyrus the king made a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem. Let the house be builded, the place where they offered sacrifices, and let the foundations thereof be strongly laid, the height thereof 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 60 cubits, with 3 rows of great stones and a roll of new timber, and let the expenses be given out of the king's house. And also let the golden and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took forth out of the temple which is at Jerusalem and brought unto Babylon, be restored and brought again unto the temple which is at Jerusalem, every one to his place, and place them in the house of God." Move down to verse 13. "Then Tatnai, governor of this side of the river, Shethar-Boznai and their companions, according to that which Darius the king had sent, so they did speedily, and the elders of the Jews builded, and they prospered through the prophesying Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo." Well, if we don't get to that, there is a prophecy in Haggai, which I did look up, and lo and behold, can I find it? I believe it's in Haggai 1. And there is a prophecy in Zechariah about the building. Yeah, it's in Haggai 1 and in Zechariah 4. So if you want to read about the connecting prophecies, you can read Haggai 1 and Zechariah 4. It goes on to say in verse 14, did we read that? Yeah, okay. Verse 14, "Then the elders of the Jews builded, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they builded and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel, according to the commandment of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, king of Persia." What? Wait a minute. What does this mean? According to Darius, and according to Cyrus, and according to Artaxerxes, king of Persia, I thought one king gave this edict. Well, in fact, one king did. And what I'm going to say, I'll stick my neck out and say Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes are the same man, one and the same. They're the same king. And if you study the book of Daniel, these names are going to throw you. Because, you know, at times Cyrus is mentioned, Artaxerxes is mentioned, Darius is mentioned, and you're like, what is going on here? But I believe that they're one in the same. Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes are one in the same king. And it's almost like, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It's almost like Ezra 6:14 tells you that. Because it's all right there, according to the commandment of Cyrus. And it could be, which is Darius, and who is Artaxerxes, king of Persia. Now, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I could be right. And at this point, I think so, but if that is true, if they're one and the same man, that will, in your studies, if you do want to go into this, it'll help you out. It'll help you out greatly. And it goes on to say, in verse 15, and this house was finished on the third day of the month of Adar, which was in the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king, and the children of Israel, and the priests, and the Levites, and the rest of the children of captivity kept the dedication of this house of God with joy, and offered at the dedication of this house of God 100 bullocks, etc., etc. And so I'm going to say to you that they built this, the streets of Jerusalem, they built this house, and then at the end of the first week of years, after 49 years, they dedicated the temple to the Lord in 405 B.C., and that was the first 7 of 7 years of the 69 weeks of years. And so, Just as a little bit of added information here, we can go to Haggai 1. Go ahead and turn there. It's on page 1277. We'll read Haggai 1. And there was a certain man, actually, I believe his name was Zerubbabel. And he was the actual man in charge of doing the actual building of the temple and the city, Zerubbabel. And so, if nothing else, I can say, wow, I mean, we're in the book of Haggai. When was the last time we were there? And, we're in Zechariah 4. Boy, when was the last time that we looked at Zechariah 4? And then we have a connection. And so I personally took some joy in connecting Haggai 1 and Zechariah 4 and Daniel 9 together. It's great. And in Haggai 1, it states, in the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month and the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest, saying, thus speaks the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. You have worn much and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none worn. And he that earns wages to put it into a bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways, go up to the mountain, and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little, and when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man into his own house. Therefore, the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth has stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which was the ground brings forth, that which the ground brings forth, and upon men, and upon the cattle, and upon all the labors of thy hands. Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord, their God, and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord their God had sent him. And the people did fear before the Lord, and spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, and the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of the remnant of the people, and they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts their God, in the 24th day of the 6th month, in the 2nd year of Darius the king. And so Haggai did prophesy about the rebuilding of the house of the Lord by the hands of Zerubbabel, and that the Lord was pleased in doing this. And apparently, he saw his people, that everything they did was meaningless, and he decided that to build his house to them again. I can see a beauty, a real excellent beauty in this. And then in Zechariah 4, 1 through 10, which was mentioned in Daniel 9, we have another connection here with Zerubbabel. So we'll read this, Zechariah 4, 1 through 10. And will be my lesson today. And I hope that, if nothing else, it made some sense of these weeks of yours. And you know, we're going to be moving on with what occurs in these weeks of years. And we're going to be looking at in times to come the war that's going to occur in Revelation. And if nothing else, this will it'll explain some of the power that these wicked principalities and powers have in their working against the work of the Lord. And so, even though Revelation is nowhere near talking about the church, which is Christ's body, it does talk about the working of angelic beings, fallen principalities and powers. And we take on an armor of God, because we fight against wicked principalities and powers in this world. And so we don't have a lot of written 1+1+1 statements about how these wicked principalities and powers are going to work on us, what they do, what they look like, how much power they have, what their names are. Anything like that. I find that to be, in my experience, I find that to be really interesting. Nevertheless, we know that we have this calling, and we have this tremendous calling, and we have a revealed sacred secret of God that's, you know, stunning, phenomenal, unbelievable, majestic, awesome, whatever words you want to put on it, and we know that we're in a battle. And so we know that there's other battles of these principalities and powers talked about in scriptures. And so if nothing else, it'll give us a idea of how important it is to guard what we know. And so I'll be talking about that, you know, as we get into talking about the, you know, the coming wicked one. If you will. And so we'll end with Zechariah 4, 1 through 10. And the angel that talked with me came again and waked me as a man that is wakened out of his sleep, and said unto me, What seest thou? And I said, I have looked, and behold, a candlestick all of gold, and a bowl upon the top of it, and his seven lamps thereon, seven pipes to the seven lamps which are upon the top thereof. And two olive trees by it, one upon the right side of the bowl, and upon the left side thereof. And now, a thought came to my mind that in the tabernacle in the wilderness, you find a candlestick there. And you find that when they ordained, the golden laver and the candlestick, they used, they might have used olive blossoms. They used blossoms of particular plants that they beat into the ornate design of these things. And when I read this, it reminds me of that, for whatever that might mean. Verse 4, so I understand and spake to the angel that talked with me, saying, what are these, my Lord? Then the angel that talked with me answered and said unto me, knowest thou not what these be? And I said, no, my Lord. And he answered and spake unto me, saying, this is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel. Oh, well, what's Zerubbabel doing in Zechariah 4? Well, we know who Zerubbabel is, and we know what Zerubbabel is doing. So that's what could enlighten us to what Zechariah 4 is about. Thou shalt become a plain, and he shall bring forth the headstone thereof, with shoutings, crying, grace, grace unto it. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. His hands also shall finish it. And thou shalt know that the Lord of hosts has sent me unto you. For who has despised the day of small things? For they shall rejoice and shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven. They are the eyes of the Lord which run to and fro through the earth. And what I think is, I think this is Zechariah is glorifying the house of the Lord, the one that's built by Zerubbabel. And so this is how Zechariah connects with Haggai, which connects to Daniel 9. And so I thank you for your time. I hope that dispensed to you. I hope that it's enlightening to you. And, to the praise and honor of his glory. And that's a serious statement on my part. So thanks a lot.